Joe McCorkle entered the publishing scene with a great splash. In 1984, Algonquin published her first two novels, July 7 and The Cheerleader, simultaneously. Since then, there have been four story collections and three more novels, but it has been 17 years since the last novel, so Life After Life is long awaited by her fans. This is a substantial piece of fiction at 352 pages, and it is a novel, but of a particular kind. There is a long literary tradition in which a group of people are thrown together, learn about one another, and may tell one another their stories, true or fabricated. Perhaps the model for folks doing this on the move is Chaucer's Canterbury Tales, while the model for a static situation might be Boccaccio's The Decameron, in which a group is hiding out from the plague in an Italian country house. The group in McCorkle's Life After Life is in a more and more common modern setting, the retirement center nursing home, in this case, the Pine Haven Retirement Community in fictional Fulton, North Carolina, some 60 miles from the Atlantic. Inside Pine Haven is a group of more than a dozen characters in various states of mobility. Some are residents, some visitors. In a wheelchair is Sadie Randolph, a retired grade school teacher sliding into dementia. She's a nice old thing. Marge Walker is much less nice. The widow of a judge, she is a snob, a bigot, and suspicious her family is too eager about their inheritance. She keeps a scrapbook of clippings about local murder cases. Toby Tyler, a nickname she always wanted to run away with the circus, is a retired schoolteacher of the best kind. She cared about her students and about literature, but was burdened for a lifetime by her now not so secret lesbianism. A novel should have romance, even in a retirement center, perhaps especially in a retirement center, and there is an odd couple we can root for. Stanley Stone, a lawyer, put himself in Pine Haven and pretends to be a foul-mouthed, sex-crazed old man to free his son to get on with his life. Rachel Silverman, also an attorney, Jewish, from Boston, came to North Carolina for reasons of her own and now doubts the wisdom of her decision. "Here I am," she says, quote, "in the home of lard, Jesus, sugared-up tea, and enough meshuggahers to fill Fenway Park," end quote. Rachel sees through Stanley's false vulgarity masquerade. I have high hopes for this couple. Much of this novel is comic, but of course not all. C.J. Loomis, the in-house beautician, is a young, pierced and tattooed single mother we are rooting for also, but she's in a mess and the odds are against her. Abby Palmer is 12 and enjoys the oldsters partly to get out of her house where her mother is torturing her father to distraction. Kendra Palmer, her mom, is as thoroughly malicious a fictional wife as I have encountered in a long time. She needs killing, but this is not that kind of book, exactly. Helping to hold this book together is the journal of Joanna Lamb, hospice worker. She observes and writes other people's stories and her own. There is some attempt at reports, as it were, from just beyond the grave, but I did not find them convincing. The complex human machinations of the living are more than enough.